Verulam Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Verulam Sport Podcast. Every week, the team behind the award-winning Radio Verulam Sports Show will provide you with the most relevant news from the local and regional sporting scenes, whilst keeping you in the picture with national and international bulletins from the world of sport. There will be topical debates, regular interviews from local talent, and chats with those big-name guests that are a mainstay of Verulam Sport. As always, this is your show, every bit as much as it is ours. So, check out Verulam Sport across social media and get involved. For now, prepare yourself for this week's action-packed Verulam Sport Podcast. Welcome to another action-packed Verulam Sport Podcast. And I tell you what, I'm sure as you are, I am likewise, any fan of sport really is going to be excited about the return of the Premier League. My word, I'm sure you enjoyed our podcast in which we analysed all things sport and tech last week, and we talked Mr. Marathon Man. And I know it's the oldest cliche in all of sport that the football season is a marathon and not a sprint, but this year it's even more apposite. What a marathon, but how exciting to have it back. And it will be back upon us, kicking off in earnest on Wednesday, the 17th of June. So tonight, myself, the machine, Jason McKenna, our newest member of the squad, the mighty Neil Stock, and of course, our ex-pro, the voice of the Saints, Graham Griffith, are here for you to analyse, to dissect, and to get you all super excited, not that you're not already, for the return of the Premier League. So here we go. But as always, introducing the man, the legend, saluting his awesome work as always, Mr. McKenna, the machine, Jason McKenna. I know you've been mega busy on social media. And I know, as always, the listeners have been giving us their Premier League thoughts, their views and their insights. Give us a few top lines, some choice news from the world of social media.
Yeah, it's been a really fun week because obviously we're gearing back up to the Premier League. I've been putting out some hashtags there, getting people involved. And I think people have really, really enjoyed some of the memories as well. And I have to thank the whole team for sending them to me there as well. Tony, Graham and Neil have kept me up to date with some footballing memories that were even there before I was even born. So good ones on that. But in terms of social media, people have been getting involved, and this is your show. So people have emailed in, they tweeted in, they've got in touch with all our social media feeds. But I think one of the biggest ones that Marion has pointed out is that she's going to be sad that she'll be losing her husband for the next month with this huge schedule of football. I thought that was a really funny one there from Marion, and I hope she doesn't lose him too much, but it is gargantuan. The times are so jam-packed together, and I think we need match fitness as well. Then Amy said it'll be a lovely boost and a distraction. John said he can't wait for the footy to be back, and the mighty Hornets to carry on their good form. Let's hope the break hasn't interrupted it, and that's something we'll probably get onto a little bit later. And then Ross has said, although Liverpool have basically won the league, there's still a lot to play for, and it'll be fun to see how it pans out. We've got a lot of comments there from other people as well. I'm sorry that I can't put them all in, but it's really good to have the football back, in my opinion. I'm so excited as well.
I'm sure you listening as a sports fanatic are likewise enthused, and I'm sure likewise you got your views. Is it a racing certainty that Liverpool can win the league? I mean, it's looking like a done deal, but it ain't over until the fat lady sings, and I've not heard an opera singer getting their voice in action yet. It's still not a done deal. But no doubt we'll talk about that. Looking forward to analysis from Jason coming up real soon. Number crunching, data analysis, and the dogfight at the bottom. As our Twitter indicated, our Watford Hornets are on a little bit of a good run. Indeed, they shook up the world in one of the most memorable moments of the season when they defeated Liverpool. But has this time out affected that momentum? Get your views in. Keep them involved. Keep involved. It's your show every bit as much as it is ours. But right now, it's absolutely a pleasure. I'm really looking forward to this. I'm going to invite the voice of the Saints, our ex-footballing pro, Mr. Graham Griffiths, the ever erudite Mr. Graham Griffiths, to just give us a little bit of a season review, a bit of a reminder, because, you know, there's been no footy since March. So just keep that fresh and give us your key insights into the season up until now, please, Graham.
Yes, thank you, Tony. And I think first and foremost, we're probably not going to see many men
around for the next 8 weeks with our long beards. I think they're going to get a lot longer now we've got this football fest coming our way on Sky Sports. But to balance that, females as well, and obviously kids, because that's what the Premier League is. And also, isn't Jason a Premier League baby, Tony and Neil? He is, you know, he is all Premier League, where we had the joy of obviously seeing previous Premier League in the likes of Leeds United, Tony's team there, winning before Premier League years started out.
I do sometimes have to remind Jason, and again, somebody's out there of a similar age, and, you know, maybe we're just a bit jealous, maybe just a bit. But the bottom line is this: there was football before the Premier League. I know it's a crazy, crazy concept, but there indeed there was. But the Premier League is what we're focusing on. Of course it is. And Graham, give us that reminder of the season up until now.
Absolutely. So I've got four categories I'm going to just share, and I'm just looking at the teams in general. So let's start with Liverpool, and that's one category, really, one team in it, which is, haven't they been irresistible? What a team. So if we look at last season, they were 1 point, you know, they got, what, 96 points, 1 point off winning the title, but obviously Man City pipped them. For them to turn around and come even stronger this year and to be ahead by 25 points, it's absolutely incredible. But if we look over the calendar year, the consistency that Klopp's got the team working to, he is the pinnacle of how you should be operating to get the best out of teams. So it's about the recruitment, blending the right personalities, the skill sets, right through to, you know, how you have the whole backroom team thinking and operating with each individual, the style of play, the psychology. It is just the perfect blend. That's everybody's dream, to manage a team to that level. So I'm delighted to see that. And I would even say that that's potentially pushing the best of Fergie's years. But we'll see in a few years what that looks like. So Liverpool, for me, irresistible. Forget the Invincibles, Jace, with Arsenal back in 2003-04. This is Liverpool's time, which is wonderful. And my second category then for a review of the season would be three teams. And these are the teams that I'm calling, in my own mind, I'm calling the overachievers. And I think they've done that to this point. And also, I think they're going to continue to overachieve. And I'm going for Wolverhampton Wanderers. I'm going for Sheffield United. And I'm going for Leicester City. All for very different reasons. And I think what Brendan Rodgers has done at Leicester is, again, he did it at Liverpool. He's done it at Celtic. He did it even at Reading beforehand, actually, and he did it at Swansea. So this guy's a real talent, I think, from a team management perspective. He gets the best out of everybody, including Vardy. So I just think that the style and flair is back for Leicester, and to get into that top four, they've been quite consistent. And when it goes to Wolverhampton, second season syndrome, I thought they would buckle this year, but they're currently sixth in the table, and, you know, they're quietly going along, and not the best Premier League start, but therefore they were in Europe quite early. But look out for them. You know, it's almost like the Portuguese B team, isn't it, playing there at the moment. But, you know, it's wonderful to see. And I just love that underdog. Another underdog really challenging the top four stroke six teams that we've had for many a year. And Sheffield United, well, you know, the big story there for me is not necessarily Sheffield United. It's Chris Wilder in himself. And I love...
Just cut your flow short real quickly on Chris Wilder, because I made a note of that name before we kicked off tonight, thinking it would probably come up. I wonder, I know it's all the wonderful things you've said about Klopp, and of course it does look like most likely it is their title. It's not yet done, mathematics and all that, and crazy things happen in sport and indeed life, but, you know, credit to Klopp and everything you broke down so wonderfully well. But I just wonder if that overachieving Sheffield United Blades team in their first season back at the highest level under Wilder means he's got to be in with a shout of manager of the season. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're probably the two, Tony, to be honest. I totally agree with you. But on different levels and scales. So Klopp is the creme de la creme, you know, the history of the club, the money, the best players. You know, you look at Mane, you look at Salah. You know, that's the pinnacle of the pinnacle. And then you've got another tier just underneath that, which is your rookie, you know, blend sort of good pros together to make them exceptional every game. And that's your Sheffield United. That's your Chrissy Wilder. But what I like about him is he's managed pretty much in every league. You know, he started right down in the lower leagues. He was manager of Halifax for a while as well in the conference. He got them to the playoffs and a FA Trophy. And he's just done superbly well. And one of his stories are back in the days, he used to go into nightclubs to recruit players. So players that had had it or lost their way, he went in to obviously just pick them up and give them a new lease of life. And I think that loyalty and how he gets the best out of players, similar to Klopp, but just on a slightly different layer, I think they've just overachieved. And that is phenomenal. And I do like that striker who was from Leeds, who went to Swansea, the big guy up front. His name will come to me shortly, but I just think he's going to be a top Premier League striker at some point. So that's my sort of overachievers, if you like. I think that's going to continue. My third category, I'm going to go with the brilliant ex-pros who turned managers. I'm going to go for your Man United and your Chelsea, so Lampard and Solskjaer. And I think they've done really well. So you've got Man United in seventh or something at the moment, and you've got Chelsea
currently lying
in
fifth, actually.
You're right.
3 points off Chelsea, who currently have that crucial fourth and final Champions League spot. So, yeah, interesting to highlight Solskjaer.
Yeah, and I think him and Lampard, that's why I put them in the same category, they're doing really well as top ex-pros, being in top managing football clubs, you know. And I think the expectation has dropped off him in the early part of the season. And I think Lampard's been more consistent with his young guns. Solskjaer's had a bit more up and down change. You can see there's some cultural issues there that he's fighting through. But of late, in particular with Fernandes, what a signing he's been. Yeah. So I can see Solskjaer with a bit of time and with the backing of Fergie still in the background, I think they could come really strong. And I'm surprised they're in fifth. I expected them to be a lot lower down. Which leads me into my last category, my fourth category of relegation. And actually, I'm going to go with two teams that I think I'm going to categorise as the great escapers. And that's one of them's Watford. I think they're going to do it. I really do. And the reason I think that is because of the impact Nigel Pearson had at the beginning. Absolutely. Yes, they've dropped off a bit. But this guy is phenomenal. I think he's so underrated as a coach.
I've said this much before on Pearson. Credit to Neil Stock's shout across social media, the Tinker Man, Ranieri, for obviously shocking the world, literally, when that once-a-generation aberration of an unknown team winning the whole thing happened when he won the title, the Premier League title, with Leicester City. But I tell you what, you talk to anybody around Leicester City Football Club, and they will tell you, they will remind you that the groundwork for that success was built upon the impetus, the structure, the squad assembled by Pearson. And he's taking that baton and he's doing wonderfully well in a similar vein with the Hornets at Watford. So great shout there, Graham.
And do you know what? So that's exactly the next point I was going to make on him is that, and I'm an outsider, right, outside of Leicester, but studying and watching him, I actually think it was his foundation and structure that assisted Leicester in winning that Premier League title. And if you remember back in the day when Leicester were in the Championship, who did he have on the bench that he brought on loan? Well, he had Danny Drinkwater and Harry Kane, right? And that just showed his vision of what he was doing with these young lads, and he even helped aid their development. So for me, when I saw, I've always said this as well, when I saw Leicester winning without having any inside information, when they won the Premier League, for me, it was like a high percentage in my mind went to Nigel Pearson. This guy's a top coach, and I'm surprised that. Maybe it's because he's direct. You know, he spent his time in Yorkshire and people don't like that. He used to be a central defender and he was a great central defender. So I just see he's going to turn it round for Watford, which leads me to my final team in Southampton. And the reason I'm saying great escape is because at the beginning of the season, they had a shocker, didn't they? They were quite low down. They had that 9-0 defeat, I think it was.
And it was against the Foxes. It was against the Foxes,
yeah, that's right. Yeah. Great point, John. Yeah. And I just think
the down point of the season.
Yeah. And how he as a manager turned that around, I think he's phenomenal. And I thought he was going to get the sack at that point. So fair play to the club for sticking with him. And look at that. Maybe the last couple of games before COVID, obviously they were dropping off a bit. But before that, he had a brilliant run and he got them up to mid-table nearly.
Yeah.
They're slightly getting dragged back in, but He's got their belief and confidence. Now, that is a tall order for a manager to pick a team up 9-0 defeat at the top of the game. That's shattering for a lot of players' mentality. Some players never recover with things like that. But he's turned them around. So I think them two teams, look out. I think they're going to do the great escape.
Love your work there, Graham. And I tell you what, make sure you're listening in, because we're going to hear from friend of the show, Richard Walker, head of comms for Watford, who Graham tips to beat the drop. They get underway against the inspired Foxes, Brendan Rodgers' team. Of course, the Vardy Renaissance. Will it continue? Will the Hornets continue to battle on and on? We'll find out and hear from Richard Walker. And that's coming up a bit later on the flow of the podcast this very week for you. Graham, great work. But now it's great to introduce our newest recruit into the fold, Neil Stock. I know, as a saint of the Southampton variety, almost shuddered a little bit in the memory of that 9-0 shellacking. But again, credit to Southampton for fighting on and going better since then. I want to invite you, Neil, though, for your memories, your key memories from the season so far.
Well, just tapping on to the end of Graham's chat about the Southampton 9-0. That was a bad memory, to be honest, as a Southampton fan. However, good memories of that season, of the season so far, as Ralph Hasenhüttl has actually done his work. Yes, players have gone, players have come in, but I think he's started to stabilise the side now, and I do think they're going to beat the drop along with Watford, as Graham said. I'm 100% with Graham on what he said there.
Neil, sorry, just a quick one on Southampton. In a previous time when we were chatting here, just before you joined the fold, when we were analysing and dissecting our favourite England 11s, one of the notes that came out of that was that West Ham, once upon a time, was some kind of mega feeder club. So many of players from their youngsters into the West Ham first 11 then went on to become England all-time greats. The list is long and varied. But you know what? Southampton are something remarkably similar. I remember watching the Champions League final. I think it was Real Madrid versus Liverpool, where Madrid actually won. Well, I think if you included, you know, the likes of Bale there, Sané, as we've referenced, doing great guns at Liverpool. But I believe that starting on that game of 22 players at the highest level in European domestic football, five ex-Saints. And that's astonishing. They truly are a wonderful eye for talent, isn't there?
Because you think the... I know, obviously, players do go along with managers. You had the exodus when, was it Claude Puel or Pochettino, I think, went to Tottenham. So with the likes of Alderweireld and a few others.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, Southampton always seem in some way or another to bounce back. And they pick up these players out of nowhere, really. Okay, you got Danny Ings who's come in. He's he's the lifeline, I think, at the moment. But then if you go back down the line of the way that players have gone through the club, there aren't many now, or that I don't think there are any players within the Southampton setup now that have been there for their whole career. The only two that I know is Francis Benali and Matthew Letizia that actually spent their whole careers at the club. But it would be nice within clubs to actually see the player go from maybe what, under 8s, under 10s, under 16s, development squads, and then through into the first team. It would be good to see that in more clubs.
I wonder if we may get this as a bit of a trend, because I would project that in the post-CV19 era, I think certainly for the next few transfer windows, teams are going to look to maybe be a little bit more cautious with the big bucks that they have been splashing over recent times. So I think that cultivation of your own internal talent may well become a trend that develops. But let's be fair, there are very few Ryan Giggses of the world or Matt Letizia's or one club men. It is a rare breed. But Neil, great points. Bringing it back, though, in focus to your memories of this season, Premier League-wise. What else is springing to mind?
Memories. The other memory is Liverpool shooting to the top and staying there all season. I wouldn't say that I'm a great Liverpool fan as such, but they have done well under Klopp. It's a remarkable think to be a point behind last season, just missing out, and now they're 25 points in front. However, it's Liverpool's to lose, if that makes sense.
It totally does.
If Man City win that game in hand, then it's all to play for. Really,
well, it's still a mountain to climb. Even if Man City do win, they're still that'll put them on 60, which will still leave them 22 points off Liverpool. You're dead right. It is theirs to lose. Their trophy is almost, you know, one hand available, but it ain't done yet. There's still plenty of football ahead, and it's going to be a strange end to the season. Any other memories, though, Neil, from the season so far? Great points so far.
I would say, obviously, you've got the likes of Burnley, Leicester, Wolves, Sheffield United, sort of all in places in the league where you wouldn't expect them to be. I wouldn't expect, because of the length of time they've been in the Premier League, I wouldn't expect Bournemouth to be in the relegation zone. But I think they're still trying to find their feet, really, and still they're what I would call, if you like, a yo-yo club. They're always up and down, a bit like Southampton, really. But I think it's a case of once COVID-19 sort of disappears, I don't think 2021 season a lot's going to happen personally, but I think 21-22 I think is where you're going to start seeing things start to move forward again, and things actually be back to some sort of normality. But they're my main points that I can pick out of the season so far. Although I was expecting Man City to potentially be a little bit closer to Liverpool than they are.
I think most would. I'm going to touch upon that in a little while. Just very quickly, before I go across to the machine, who's been doing some number crunching, and I cannot wait for that projection. And I know you listening in love a bit of data analysis from our man, the machine. But just quickly, when it comes to memories of this season, and obviously we do chat to Richard Walker, the head of comms at Watford, and they are essentially, from a geographical perspective, our local Premier League team. But goodness me, just objectively, one of the greatest shocks in all of sport across all walks of sport must be when Liverpool, Watford defied the odds, beating Liverpool. And it was a shellacking, it has to be said, in front of their home faithful, a 3-0 win. There was no debate about it in the final analysis. This is, again, reminding people there was football before the Premier League. In all of top flight football history, going way back to 1888, in all of that history, they were 55 points off Liverpool at the start of that very halcyon day from a Hornets perspective. 55 points. In all of that history, since 1888, nobody ever has caused a victory, an upset victory, with a bigger points discrepancy. Astonishing. The previous record was 51 points when West Ham upset Man United back in 2007. That was 51 points. And also Man United have the likewise equal, not very proud record of, again, losing against West Brom from 2012, when again they were 51 points clear at the start of the day of the Baggies. But 55 points differentiation between Liverpool at the very apex of the league at the time, Watford in the relegation zone, is the most astonishing upset in all of top flight football history. Of course, Jason has a wry smile on his face remembering this, because that snapped a run of 44 unbeaten games for Liverpool under Klopp. And that was only five away, five digits. It's like your hand, just five other results away from equaling that Arsenal unbeaten record of the unbeatables from a few seasons back. So again, for me, that is the immediate memory of this particular season. And I honestly would put it up there with when AJ, Watford's own AJ Joshua, got beaten recently by 11th hour stepping, the unfancied AJ Ruiz. And even before that, when Buster Douglas shocked Mike Tyson, it was, I think, that much of a knockout blow, history making, and it is the biggest memory for me of this particular season to date. But there's so much exciting football ahead and can't wait to unpack it. We're talking there, that's a big date in the history of the league. Now, we're going to get into some data crunching. I'm going to cross to my friend, the awesome machine, Jason McKenna. What have you got for us to feast upon tonight?
Yes, thank you, Tony. I've been really excited for the Premier League to return, but I think some of these teams that I'm about to talk about will be a little bit worried. And I'm going to discuss a little bit later the ins and outs of how coronavirus, the lockdown and empty stadiums might have affected it. But in terms of data, I have been doing my number crunching as always. So I'm going to start, you know, numerically with obviously the 15th place team Brighton moving it down to 20th. So I'm not giving any sort of bias here or whatnot. I'm literally looking at the data. And as mentioned there, starting at 15th, I'm looking at Brighton. And they are in a worrying place. They're the only side without a win in 2020. And up next for them, it's a bit worrying, Arsenal, Leicester, and Manchester United. Now, I feel bad because obviously under Graham Potter this season, the club have gone in with an ethos of play good football, build a team for the future, which is really excellent and what a small club like them should be doing. And they've actually posted average to lower than average data. So realistically, they should actually be looking about a 10th to maybe 12th or 15th finish in terms of their numbers. But the team have severely, severely underperformed their data. And this is probably due, in fact, to the strikers not being of high enough quality. So we're looking at the likes of Glenn Murray, who, let's be honest, he's getting quite old now. You know, he should be more towards retirement age. They spent big money on Neil Mapai from Brentford, who did bits in the Championship, but it's not moved up into the Premier League. And then they have the young striker as well, the Irish one called Connolly, who's he's done well, but he's not Premier League standard yet either. So the team have, you know, somewhat reliance on these players that aren't doing the bits there in front of goal. But what they have done is they've tightened somewhat at the back, which is a problem that they actually had last season. And the Seagulls were a little bit leaky at the back last season, which they've really got together this time. So if the team can kind of match their expected data, their output, then I think that they should be more than safe. And although they have a tough set of games into the start of the season, the four games later, they can expect to pick up points. And they've got really good few fixtures, some of them home, although I don't know how much that will impact. But going into the end of the season, there's four games there that they can really expect to pick up points from. So from them, I think that they will be about safe as their defence will see them over the line. Is that something that you can kind of see there, Graham, that defence will see them meet the output of no relegation?
Brilliant shout, Jace. I do like Byrne, who they bought at the beginning of the season.
Very
who
good.
Came in from Wigan. Yeah, he's a centre-half, but they play him at left-back, I think. And he's done really well. He's about 6'5", something like that. And he's quite athletic for his height. One of the reasons I think Brighton will be okay is that I think they've got one of the best midfielders, unknown midfielders in the Premier League, which is an Australian player, and you'll probably know him, or you'll correct me, Jason, if he's not that good, but I think he's brilliant, is Aaron Moy, and I think for that reason they'll be fine.
I'm not sure they will be fine. I think it's very disconcerting, again, that stat, Jason, wonderfully framed, that they are the only team across the whole league without a win this calendar year, 2020. Again, that tough start. That's momentum. It's difficult to turn the bus around. And again, what's beautiful about those stats is they point out that they are underperforming. And that's why stats themselves only tell but half the picture. The lack of goals is disconcerting. And I'm a little worried for the Seagulls, quite frankly. And I will add just quickly before we go back to Jason to give us some more of this wonderful insights framed by number crunching, wonderful data analysis. I do think that they've got a wonderful manager, a great young Englishman who did phenomenal things out in Sweden, just massively overachieving in what he did there in UEFA context. Real stunning stuff there. So, you know, he's a talented man. He's a young manager with a great mind and a great football philosophy. And I think long-term, maybe similar, and you'll probably tell us more in a minute, similar to Norwich near the bottom, literally at the bottom, rooted to the bottom at the moment, Norwich are, who maybe have to have a slightly bigger picture thinking and just see where the season may lead and obviously fight tooth and nail to achieve what they can, but then not cut their cloth, not make any radical changes, but just commit to two very good managers with very strong philosophies and a bigger picture. They may well bounce back even stronger. That's my two pennies on Brighton. But tell us some more, Jason.
No, I really like what you're saying there as well, Tony. I do have to agree. And you kind of seen that with Burnley as well, that long-term thinking with another manager that they kept even after relegation. So I can't agree more. Now, one team who's probably done the absolute opposite here. We're moving on to 16th place, West Ham. Now, out of all the teams in the relegation, I would say that the Hammers are probably the most deserving to go down. And I think this probably won't go down well with the West Ham fans. But for a club that has relatively good wealth, a super stadium, enviable youth facilities, the owners have really, really wasted resources there. Mm-hmm. They're a side that could fight for European places with the pockets that they have. But in terms of on the pitch, really mixed run, and the total management in terms of the changeover from Pellegrini to Moyes, it just further enhances the narrative that they're not very well run as a club. Now, their first matches after restart are four tough fixtures, but their last six are all against bottom half teams. That could be the saving grace there for West Ham. But in terms of personnel as well, I would say West Ham are probably blessed with the best attackers in terms of those relegated or probably relegated teams. But it's their defensive data, which is so, so poor at West Ham. Their reliance.
You know, well, that's been the tale of West Ham for so many years. It really, really has. Concerning that they've not yet been able to solve this dilemma. Give us the facts as they stand, please.
Well, the reliance or over-reliance on Fabianski is so exposed. And since David Moyes rejoined the side in game week 21, I was initially optimistic, but the team has posted bottom three data on most of the metrics, including the third most shots in the box conceded, second most big chances conceded, and third worst XG conceded. Brr. So the side have somewhat been carried by an overperformance in front of goal as well. So they're a team a little bit opposite to Brighton there, that they're actually doing well in front of goal, but the rest of the team is letting them down. And I would say any attack in Premier League is going to be hindered if you can't defend well and you can't get your ball to your attacking players. So my opinion is they have enough just to stay up because of their personnel up front. But if they want to avoid this next season, they're going to really, really struggle. I don't know if you can add anything to that there, Graham, in terms of tactics or even a philosophy perspective.
Absolutely, Jess. This is where I'll agree your data spot on, because I totally... The problem is they've got the attacking players, but they're going to concede. And they're not a team that's going to score more than concede. I think they're doomed. And just to quickly say on this, I think financially they're the best run Premier League club I'm going to put out there, because quickly tell you about the London Stadium. They're only renting it for £2.5 million for the year, right? Over a 99-year lease. So actually, the 50, 60 million they're spending looks good, but it's pennies. So financially, they're fantastically run. It's just making the right decisions.
It's going to be fascinating, indeed very compelling, to see how empty stadium may be a weird, imponderable X factor. But I'll tell you something. You're right, Graham, and what they've done there is wonderful business. And it is a wonderful amphitheatre. I mean, it stands out. It's iconic. You do talk to West Ham fans who just don't feel as though it's designed for football. Clearly it's not. And I just wonder if that connection that the Upton Park faithful used to have and engender may be something that's missing. And it's just going to be fascinating. We just don't know yet till it kicks off next week how this empty stadium effect will maybe be an equalising factor for all teams as we enter into the re-emerging Premier League. Just briefly your thoughts on that, Graeme, and then we'll go back to Jason's wonderful data crunching.
And I've worked at the London Stadium a few times with Major League Baseball, and it's brilliant for a baseball event. Is it a football event? It's a very difficult stadium to make a brilliant Upton Park. It's really difficult. So I sort of empathise with the West Ham fans. And I think that does play a big part in how they're disgruntled a little bit about where the team should be, because they have invested in certain aspects. And you're right, Jace, to go from Pellegrini to David Moyes, actually, I think that's a shrewd move for the reason of they've got to shore up at the back. So from a stadium point of view, Tony, you're right. It's a very, very difficult stadium for the old traditional English football game. For concerts and everything else, it's wonderful.
Again, it's an amphitheatre. It's truly one of the most iconic stadiums in all the world, and so many memories from London 2012 and all that. But again, I'm dubious as to its qualities and its appropriateness for Premier League football. Nevertheless, Premier League football is back in focus. And I love, Jason, that you've begun this data crunching by the compelling dogfight at the bottom, because you kicked it off with Brighton on 29 points, played 29 points. You've just invited and informed us about West Ham, 27 points. But right down to, I think Norwich are doomed, but never know. But Norwich on 21 points. So if they get on a good run, they're still in for at least a fighting chance. The battle at the bottom is going to be one of the most compelling elements of this returning Premier League. So I love that you kicked off with that. And moving down now, one would presume you're onto the Hornets.
I am indeed. And, you know, we're talking about Vicarage Road here, and we talk about the biblical things that Pearson has been doing. They are miracles. But like Graeme has said a little bit earlier, I think he's one of the underrated managers in English football. He's a cut above the rest. And when Watford signed him, I was really, really excited. And boy, has he delivered. I mean, since arriving at Vicarage Road, Pearson has made the Hornets not just into a side that's got out of relegation, but they're really formidable. And as we've talked about a little bit earlier, they beat Liverpool. They took away that unbeaten run. But they didn't just do it out of luck. They were the better side. Now, in terms of data, the numbers are fantastic with Watford. They are a top eight potential European side if we look at the data from the team since Pearson's arrival at the club. And the biggest improvement area is something that West Ham definitely need to look at. Mm-hmm. It's defence. And this is an amazing work that Nigel has done. He's reduced the big chances that the team conceded. Now, big chances are chances where they have a 50% likelihood of leading to a goal. And he's reduced them so, so much that actually Watford have the sixth least goals conceded in the league since Pearson has been there. That's phenomenal stuff. And Watford, going into the fixture difficulty, I've looked into the data here. They're about 13, so it's a kind of hard run there, but there are some attractive looking fixtures. And again, although home advantage is a little bit worn away now, I think, you know, we don't have to worry too much. I think they're going to stay up. And also, I've been looking at some of the training videos as well that Pearson has done. He's been doing rondos. He's been doing things that you wouldn't expect of a lower down the league kind of manager. He's really worked on a lot of things, and set pieces as well, which is what Pearson, I think, is really known about. So I think that's a really positive one. Is there anything that you two want to add on that? Or Neil, you can jump in as well.
Just super quickly, as a reminder to everybody, again, this is your show, get involved. I'm sure you've got opinions on the data crunching that Jason is wonderfully bringing to the table here. Tweet at Verum Sport always. It's your show, every single bit, as much as it is ours. And on this, make sure you're listening, because after this analysis of the returning Premier League, you can hear returning friend of the show, Richard Walker, head of comms for Watford, to preview their returning fixture against High Fly Leicester City. I'll tell you what, I think that's actually quite a good fixture to kick off with, because, again, it's just this X factor, this return after such a long period of isolation. And when they're up against those on paper, Vardy Renaissance and all of that that we've already discussed today, Leicester City up in third in the Premier League, you'd think very tough fixture. But again, I think this is almost an equalising factor, this hiatus. And therefore, a good one, if you're going to get that under your wing, starting off with a bang and then building again. I think Watford will be fine. Can't wait to hear the views of Richard Walker, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy hearing those too. Graham, quickly, your thoughts on Watford.
Yeah, I agree with everything we've said so far. I think Pearson's got that wow factor. If they do go down, I think they should stick with him. I think that's the least probability. And I love Jason's point there about the data. So as you know, I'm 50-50 on data in football, Jason. I think the data on Watford, spot on. That makes total sense to me, looking at it from a different side of how to build teams and the psychology behind it. But then if I look at Brighton, I think that data doesn't really help Brighton. I think actually they've got more going for them for the reasons stated. So, yeah, I think they're potentially two positives. I think West Ham are doomed. I really do. I could be totally wrong there, but I just think there's something not quite right. Norwich, even if are they expected to stay up as a football club? They're Stuart Webber. He's probably the over-exceeded the last season to get up there. So they're in a brilliant shape to go down and come back up, and that's not too daunting for them. And then the third person out, a third team out of all of that, it could be anyone. I do worry for Bournemouth.
No doubt Bournemouth are next on Jason's list of analysis, which is great stuff. I really appreciate the data crunching and the analysis here. I think they give great topics for debate, and they're, of course, anchored literally in facts up to a point. The only one that I just can't ever get on. But we'll have that for another day, another time. Again, your thoughts on XG. I'd love to hear from you. Seriously, put me in my place if you're a fan of it. I'm always open to be educated, but I just can't get enthused by XG. But there we go. What's always excelente is Jason's continued analysis from a data perspective, projecting forwards for this relegation scrap. Next on the list, Graham thinks they're going to struggle. The Cherries. Eddie Howe's Bournemouth are in the 17th and at the moment final relegation place, but they are level on points with Watford. So all to play for. Jason, what's the data telling us and you about the data, the Bournemouth perspective?
Yeah, so in terms of fixtures, the data for Bournemouth, they couldn't, the Cherries couldn't pick a harder running into the end of the season. You know, they had the third hardest run of any team in the Premier League, and the only teams with worse runs are Leicester, who are basically confirmed to be absolutely fine, vying for Champions League, and Crystal Palace, also a team that absolutely fine. So two fixtures in their first three are probably decent. The aforementioned Palace are playing Bournemouth and also Newcastle United, but then the rest of those fixtures, my goodness, it's going to be really scary. You know, as Alex Ferguson would say, squeaky bum time until the end of the season for Bournemouth. It is not good stuff there. And I think the story of Bournemouth, again, is a consistent one like West Ham. It's glaring issues that just have not been solved. I don't know if it's a personnel issue. I don't know if it's a coaching issue. But the fact is that the defence is shambolic, and it has been for many seasons now. They've allowed the second most chances this season, and they sit fifth worst for their other data. So only Southampton, West Ham, Norwich and Aston Villa have let in more goals than them. And that's not good stuff for a team that is wanting to stay up. In fact, the teams that do want to avoid relegation really have to focus on defence. But I think what's really, really damaged Bournemouth this season is previously they were a really attractive side to watch, and they scored lots of really good goals, entertaining football, and often they could outscore their opponents, especially those lower down the table. But this risky tactic has really come to bite them in the behind this season, because they sit second bottom for shots in the box this season, third lowest for chances created, and fourth lowest for that swear word there, XG. But I think their fate is actually sealed. For me, they're actually one of the favourites for relegation, because they just don't really have that togetherness that they've had before. And I really don't see how they're going to turn it round unless they can start scoring the goals again. That's the only thing. And in terms of Bournemouth as a whole team, it's really worrying for their finances as well, because they've overspent to be able to stay up in the Premier League. They're one of those teams that will be on the edge if they do get relegated. What do you think on that, though, Tony Graham? Well, Do you think I'm a little bit off there with Bournemouth?
I think the brilliant analysis. Really appreciate the data's speaking volumes there. Again, I'll never get on board with XG, but as I always do, appreciate the overall leads and information we can glean from these wonderful stats. I think they're in a big, big trouble, a big, big hole. They are, of course, at the moment in the final relegation place and 17th in the league. The thing that struck me quickly, Graham, on this one, and Neil, sorry, just quickly on this Bournemouth one, the thing that struck me, the emblem of their up to now, which is their fifth straight season, like what came up with our Watford 5 seasons ago, has been that their home form has always been really strong. I know, as I've referenced already, the imponderable of home field advantages may be negated. We'll see. But this season, in front of the home faithful, I think they've got a very poor record. They've actually done better on their travels. And if they can't avert that, allied with the stats which shows the leaky goals and, you know, even the paucity of goals, it's not boding well. I think they're doomed. Likewise, Graham, the stats seem to indicate that. Neil, quickly, your thoughts on Bournemouth.
Yeah, what I was going to say was I don't think Bournemouth have always had that same capacity in their ground. I think it's one of the lowest in the Premier League. So maybe, yes, they've got the advantage of the closeness around the pitch. Mm-hmm. But I think also from a financial and a business perspective, I think in some way or form, at some point in the near future, they need to build and grow. Because they've stayed sort of stagnant, if you like, off the pitch for most really the last 5 or 6 seasons, to be truthful. And they just need to.
And yeah, and just to say there as well, Tony Neil, exactly, great point. So we're just going to come on 3 points for Bournemouth, and it's similar to what Jason said, is that this season they've lost their midfield. I think that's one of the biggest issues of why they've been struggling. They've got great attackers. They've got great defenders. Their midfielders, hence no shots in the box, have been too far ahead of the ball in play. And therefore, there's been no follow-up from midfield. Having said that, I think they've got a brilliant young Danish international. I think he's 23 or something. Philip Billing. Wonderful, beautiful footballer. I can see him with a top 6 team in the future. He's just great. It's not worked for him this season. And then the other thing on the finances with Bournemouth, I've been down there quite a few times. Capacity is 11,500. Premier League football, the attendance doesn't matter anymore. It's about the TV money and it's about the commercialism. Yeah. And the other thing to state is they're backed by a very a big wealthy Russian billionaire. They're trying to build and expand the stadium anyway. So I just think tactically, they've had a good so many seasons in the Premier League now. Eddie Howe's still a great manager. I just think his change-up hasn't worked for him this season and he's trying to get out of jail. So next season, they'll be fine, whatever league they're in.
Great points again there, Graham. Appreciate your professional insights. Going now to our professional data guru to move down. We've gone through Bournemouth. Now, Aston Villa, of course, beaten by Man City in the League Cup. Grealish will be very attractive to many teams. I'm sure the vultures are circling. But right now, even with inspiration from Grealish, Aston Villa are next on the chopping block. 19th in the league, 25 points. What's the data telling us about the men from the West Midlands, Jason?
Yeah, I think as well, it's not just a data thing with Aston Villa. I think, Graham, you know, when I throw it to you a little bit later, I think there's a big psychology element here that they brought in so many new faces into the club at the start of the season. And yes, they really did have a clear philosophy with Dean Smith. It's very attacking. It's very progressive style of football. But when you bring in so many new personnel, it's like Fulham 2.0. It really rocks the boat, especially with a team that's come up. You know, there's quite a few dependable, hardy players normally when you've done that relegation battle. People have proved themselves. Whereas if you bring people in, they're quite mercenary. And I feel that that has happened at Aston Villa. Yes, they've got the high wages, but what are they really fighting for apart from proving themselves to maybe move on to another club? One of the things that really shocked me, though, this season with Aston Villa, with Dean Smith, is the fact that their set-piece work has been so, so poor. Now, he's somebody that comes from the Brentford school of data analytics, and set-pieces is one of the things that you can really get ahead on if you work on them. And he was really good at Brentford, but Not so at Aston Villa. I don't know where it's gone wrong. I don't know if it's the coaching there or something else. But in terms of that data, they're one of the worst in the league. And that's where they're really getting caught out. Now, poor defence and difficult games are coming up against Champions League hopefuls. So they have Chelsea, Sheffield United and Wolves, plus basically Liverpool, who are champions, make it very, very worrying for Villa. Only Crystal Palace have more games against top half opposition towards the end of the season than Aston Villa, and they have the fourth worst statistical run into the end of the season. So trumping, they're not trumping Bournemouth there, but God, it's really bad. Now, through the season, Villa have the worst defence in terms of goals conceded, 56 so far, and their data suggests that they should probably actually be doing worse. They have by far the worst shots in the box conceded, eclipsing that of even Norwich, which I think some people will be surprised by 50. It's huge, the amount of shots that they're allowing, high-quality chances as well. And what's sad, like I said a little bit earlier there with Dean Smith, they want to play attractive football. And they're in the top half of chances created, shots in the box. They just haven't been clinical enough. And McGinn and Grealish have really, really carried that side. Again, it's probably because they don't have good quality strikers putting away chances. But it just seems sad for me that Smith is a good manager. I just hope that he's given more time at Aston Villa and maybe steadies the ship. But I think Aston Villa are going to be relegated. They're arguably the worst side in the Premier League, even more so than Norwich. But I don't know if any disagreement on that one between all of you.
I think, as always, you make some very valid points there. You mentioned that the bees of the Brentford team going to endeavour to get their chairman, Radlett's own Cliff Crown, on Verum Sport Podcasting, because, of course, the Championship returns on the 20th of June too. So working hard to achieve that goal. Dean Smith, again, highly rated, again, has this attractive philosophy, as akin almost to my analysis of Graham Potter at Brighton. I hope that they do hold faith, irrespective of what happens, because I think long-term, that's going to be a good fit. But I am concerned for Aston Villa. They are historically a massive club. Again, maybe slightly overachieved, maybe slightly distracted by that League Cup run, losing, of course, as they did to Man City in the final very recently. But overall, it's not boding well for the villains there. Neil, before I go to Graham, your quick thoughts on Aston Villa.
They are normally, or they are a big club, West Midlands club. And to be honest, I would expect a club the size of Aston Villa, first season back in the Premier League, I would have expected them to finish around mid-table. I would have thought they would have finished around mid-table, sort of going on the momentum they had at the end of last season. I would have thought they would have done a little bit better than they have. But obviously, the stats and the data from Jason just explains everything, what's going on, to be honest.
It totally does. And I'll tell you what, I really liked, Jason, your call there of Fulham Mark II. Goes to show that money can't buy you happiness, and it certainly can't guarantee you Premier League success.
Graham, just quickly, one quick question.
Go ahead, go on.
Just one quick question to throw out to all three of you, really. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on maybe we can touch on it later as well, what effect do you think this three-month break is going to have?
It's a brilliant question, but there are so many imponderables. I think I don't want to skirt the question because I think it's a very good one, but I just think there are so many imponderables nobody knows. Like I said earlier, when it comes to Watford against Leicester, I think it could prove to be a great equaliser initially. Tell you something, from a stats perspective, what does concern me is that Zone 7 have done a lot of data crunching and analysis of when the seasons are condensed and protracted in World Cup years and such. There's a 25 5% increase in risk of injury. Now, I think that's a massive concern. Obviously, I don't wish it to happen. Truly cross my fingers it won't come to effect. But that's a telling stat, 25% increase in injury. And that's all it takes, is an injury to one of the star players, from one of the big guys down there fighting for their lives, or the likes of Liverpool may indeed be a season changer. We don't hope that's going to happen. Of course, we don't. But we have to be conscious of it. It's a stat that does not lie. That, for me, is going to be telling. But, Neil, great question. But honestly, time itself will tell on this one. Graham, quickly, because there's so much still to pack in to tonight's Premier League preview. But quickly, your thoughts on the men from the West Midlands and their plight.
Yeah, totally agree. Now, I think our expectations of football fans are too high now, and certainly Villa's have always been very high. So I think the club's in a transition phase. That transition phase hasn't quite worked as quickly as it should have done. So when they got promoted, let's think back, there were three or four seasons in that championship. They had several managers. It wrecked the club. They did very well to survive in the championship. Dean Smith came in. He's a boyhood fan. He's brought them up a bit like Chris Wilder at Sheffield United. They brought in these 12, 13 players, which actually can work for certain clubs. And therefore, the transition period hasn't kicked in quick enough for them. I think that's the issue there. They've definitely got the players. They've got the fan base. I think they could, if any team down there is going to get out of this, I think they've got something in there. They've got Jack as obviously their little secret weapon.
I tell you what, I think all the vultures are circling, and I think he's a real bona fide talent. But will he be enough alone to inspire the villains? We'll find out. Time will tell. But lots are still cram in, and that moves us on now to the team currently rock bottom, a team that I know Nana McKenna has affinity towards. Friend of the show, Nana McKenna, always giving a shout out. We're talking, of course, about Norwich, currently rock bottom of the Premier League, on 21 points from their 29 games. What are the stats revealing about the men from Norfolk?
Yeah, Norwich are a really sad tale in terms of the Premier League. And as you said, obviously, I have family links to the area. But in terms of just looking at the team, injuries have really hit the side hard. And it's the type of football that they play. They're very pressing. Again, another attacking side. And in many ways, they're, in quotes, playing the right style of football. But they're just not going to keep up in the Premier League doing it that way. Now, they do have actually very good fixtures. This could be the saving grace for Norwich. They've got Southampton, Everton, Brighton, West Ham and Burnley, who have had mixed results this season, all of them, and leaky defences. So it's one to look out for. Also, going into this, 4 clean sheets and only 7 goals conceded in their last 7 games. Kind of said to some people, have Norwich finally sorted out the defence? And this comes from the fact that coming back into their side was their fully fit defenders who hadn't been there all season. I mean, if you were to take out Trent Alexander-Arnold, Van Dijk and the whole Liverpool defence, I think they'd probably let in a fair few goals as well. It's just just a real shame that it all happened at the same time for Norwich City. Now, at the start of the season, they looked really good coming out of the blocks against City. They got that shocking result. And in the first game of the season, they looked really good against Liverpool, even though they conceded 4 goals. A lot of people said that they could have possibly drawn that game. But the data has been poor all season. But that is why I've contextualised it with the fact that most of their best players haven't been there. And in the real world, probably looking at the data, they should probably be relegated. But it's the fact that these all-important players are coming back into their side. They've got their first team regular centre backs, but I will reference their season in the Championship. They outscored teams, but they never really defended teams. So what they did was they just played people off the park in terms of scoring bundles and bundles of goals. So I think they might need to be more pragmatic. They might need to abandon this affinity for really attacking football, and they might stay up. But I think the 8 points is too much. It's a hurdle too high. And really, it's sad to say, but Norwich should really look at teams like Newcastle and just park the bus all season and get hoof it up and score a lucky goal here and there. I think that is the problem with them.
At the end of the day, Jason, there are so many wonderful points there. And football, again, has to embrace it. It's an entertainment business. I get that. And one would always like, ideally, to win beautifully. But the beautiful thing about the beautiful game is that it is not an aesthetic. It is not gymnastics or a ballet. If you win 1-0, you win. You bag 3 points. If that's done ugly, then who cares? Jose Mourinho, my man Jose, has made a glittering CV career predicated on that very simple philosophy. I think Norwich may need to take a little lesson there. It's interesting to hear that improved defensive form of late. But again, is that imponderable that we've discussed? That hiatus, how will that impact upon it? I think they need, like nobody else in the league, they are rock bottom, to begin with a bang or they are done and dead. Graham, quickly, your thoughts on current rock bottom of the Premier League, Norwich.
So I know a few people at the football club, and I was over there in February, actually. So I've got a bit of an insight from a point of view of, I actually don't think Norwich are as rock bottom as them numbers look like. Mm. But I think your statistics, Jase, are spot on. If any team's going to do something more, I think there's something in Norwich. Basically, he's had his B team defence all season. Yep. He's had a horrendous injury list, and he's just done well to hang in there. And let's not forget when they beat Man City, you know, that's when they were really good, and they lost another 3 or 4 players after that game with long-term injuries. So I think they've done phenomenally well. Stuart Webber, the sporting director at Norwich City Football Club, has had a very fruitful career, and he started off with Kenny Dalglish at Liverpool. So Norwich City are in safe hands behind the scenes, which makes me think they could do it. They could stay up. There's something good there. It's a great relationship between Daniel Farke and Stuart Webber. And actually, I think Stuart Webber, as I say, is probably one of the best sporting directors in the UK, if not Europe at the moment. So even if they do go down, I think they're in a strong place for the team to watch out for. They're building, and I think they're the team to watch in the next 3 to 5 years.
Very good young team building. And again, that emerging defence coming out for the first time is going to be exciting to see Norwich, but they do have that mountain, 8 points off safety at the moment. Premier League kicks off next Wednesday. I know you've been enjoying this show, and I know you've got your thoughts Premier League-wise. I want to hear from you. Always, this is your show, every bit as much as it is ours. Tweet at Verulam Sport. Keep your Premier League thoughts coming in. Will Norwich survive? Will the Hornets continue to climb? Liverpool champions? Surely there must be, surely, but not yet mathematically certain. Tweet at Verulam Sport. I really do encourage you to keep involved. Neil, real quickly, before we move this on, final thoughts from you on Norwich and their chances of Premier League survival. Well,
it looks to me that they're out and out done. But with this break, you just don't know what's going on, what's happened behind the scenes with training. The mentality may have changed with the players. Nobody knows how these last 3 months are going to affect anything. It could even affect Liverpool, to be truthful. It could affect the teams top to bottom. But they've got a mountain to climb. It is 8 points, isn't major. It can be done. And there is a chance they could do it with the people they've got in the background. And the players they've got coming back defensively, I do think they do have a chance. They definitely have a chance.
They dare to dream. But, of course, you say 8 points is not insurmountable, but it does basically equate to 3 wins they need to find almost. And that's not an easy task. I suspect they are one and done. But I hope, like we've referenced already with Brighton and also the likes of Bournemouth, Aston Villa, these young English managers, German in the Norwich case, but nevertheless a very good football philosophy, a very good infrastructure. Whatever happens to all of these great teams, I hope they see bigger picture thinking and don't cut ties, because I think that could well prove counterproductive. Jason, this has been a supremely productive piece. Always value your inputs and analysis here. Final thoughts on this. And then I think you're going to remind us of another little special sub-podcast that's coming up today.
Yeah, I think a little bit earlier you said, Tony, that we shouldn't delve too much into the ins and outs of the effects of COVID. And I think you're right there, because we really don't know. We've looked at the Bundesliga, but obviously the data set there, again, my kind of data analysis, the set there is so small that we can't really kind of extract anything meaningful as of yet. So it'll be really, really interesting to kind of look across all the leagues in Europe in this kind of bubble of a situation that hopefully will never, ever happen again. But it is a very, very strange reason. But I will say this, that people should be prepared for very strange things and maybe shocking things to happen due to this. And also there is a high risk of injury, as you pointed out there, Tony. But yes, in terms of this, I hope you've enjoyed my analysis, because Graham and I will be offering up an analysis of the European spots. So we're going to be going through, I think, as we've kind of talked about it, Liverpool, Man City are kind of set to be fine. But we'll be going down the other teams vying for the Champions League and European spots, because that is also a really great kind of fight that will keep the Premier League kind of alive for a little bit longer, I think, until those are decided as well.
Looking forward to that, Jason, and appreciating your work just now. You mentioned there Man City, and I want to touch upon them. Neil, earlier today, you introduced a very good point that you kind of anticipated them to be much closer challenging and then they are at present. And as I say, these are the facts. Again, it's by no means a done deal, but we talk about Norwich having a mountain to climb. Well, if Man City win their game in hand against the Gunners coming up next Wednesday, that'll put them on 60 points, still a full 22 away from Liverpool, who seemingly are inexorably heading to their first title since, I think, 1991, a full 30-plus years. Goodness me. So it's exciting times for the men from Merseyside. But Man City, wondering, have they underperformed? I will begin by saying that it is really, really, really hard indeed to claim three consecutive Premier League titles. If you actually look throughout the history of the Premier League, and I know for some people that's when football actually began, it's only happened on two occasions. Both the times by the other team, from the Manchester area. Of course, Ferguson's Manchester United. They claimed this incredible feat of three back-to-back Premier League titles on two occasions. The amazing treble-winning side of 1999, then went on a title-winning run up to 2001. And Sir Alex Ferguson wasn't done with dynasty Man United. They bagged another three straight titles between 08 and 2010. But that is the only two times in all of Premier League history teams have gone on to win three titles. So just giving it the frame, the historical context, which just speaks volumes. It ain't an easy thing to win three league titles in a row, is the simple, basic reality of it. But I will say this much. The tail off for Man City this season, when you think back to that amazing domestic treble of the year before, where, of course, they pulverised Watford at Wembley in the season finale. Plus, you think the guy who really led the stage in that FA Cup final, De Bruyne, available for a full season after injury plagued post Euro activity from the previous campaign. You think, well, that's as good as a new signing can be, but they've tailed off. And again, that 22 points off the top is very telling indeed. Liverpool have benefited from this emblem of all true great sides. They win late in the dying seconds, Fergie time style. They eke out draws when they look like they were going to lose. And the opposite, almost the antithesis, has been the effect for Man City this season. We've referenced it in our analysis there, Jason, of Norwich's shocking result against the defending champions Man City. But there have been all far too many of those kind of results. I've got two things I want to say. One, I'm going to pose a question, and the first one is just a quick point. There's a weird thing, isn't there, in sport, where there is almost an aura that teams develop over a sustained period. Again, I just think Tiger Woods, for instance, almost won majors before he even teed off, because we can't beat Tiger, he's the man kind of syndrome. And Man City, I think, benefited from that two consecutive titles, and obviously leagues and plenty of cups in the cabinet. And I think this season, slowly but surely, that luster, that aura has been nibbled away, so that, for instance, a Norwich don't look at Man City as impossible foes, but a team of human beings like any other who on their day can well be beaten. So I think that's had an effect. But the question is this. We all know that no one individual makes a team. It's a wonderful team sport. But the loss of company, I wonder, as a captain, as a heartbeat, I think, for instance, last season's that wonderful goal, clipping, you know, whoever it was, to claim one of those beautiful late winners that was instrumental in their title campaign. And again, he wasn't necessarily a goal scorer, a great defender, but moreover, the heartbeat, the leader, this talisman, a la Troy Deeney at Watford, for instance. So, gentlemen, the question is this. Have Man City underperformed? Is it too much to expect three titles like I began this point on? But the loss of company, your thoughts. Going first of all to our ex-pro, the voice of the Saints, Graham Griffin, your thoughts on all of the above there.
So brilliant question, Tony. And I think that they have not underachieved. So I think, let's put it in perspective, the seasons that they have done really well, including last season, they overachieved as a team from a team function perspective. But we seem to think that that's become the norm. And if they don't do that again, they're underperforming. So we always gauge a team on through the season. Can they get average 2 points per game, right? So they're probably doing that and probably just exceeding that, I believe. I've not got the numbers in front of me. So that's still good. Now, the issue is, and you've picked up on one of them, which I think is really, really good, is that losing someone like Vincent Kompany so soon, not necessarily for his playing ability, which was good, but not the best in his later years because of his injuries, but the heartbeat and leadership behind the scenes, I think that was a big loss, which they couldn't replace. Mm-hmm. They tried to, but that failed. And then the second thing is Mikel Arteta, hence why I'm delighted that this Arsenal and Man City are playing each other. That's going to be a real ding-dong of tactical nous. And I think Arsenal might come out on top because Mikel was the understudy and they always get their day, don't they? So let's not underestimate. We know to be a successful team, it's not just about the football on the pitch. There's loads of ingredients to making it work for Liverpool and Man City. We've taken two ingredients out, not being replaced in Mikel Arteta and Vincent Kompany. That's the issue for this season. But they've still done well. They've not underachieved. Well, so I think a bit of credit really to Pep to keep going.
And again, so very hard to win three consecutive Premier League titles, just done twice in all the history of the Premier League. And again, I think most fans across the land would really quite like to be where Man City are, still in the Champions League contention, still mathematically in contention for the Premier League. Of course, they've already bagged silverware this campaign, beating Aston Villa at Wembley in the League Cup final. So I think you made some wonderful points there, Graham. Before I get the machine's take on Man City's fate this campaign. Neil, our new man, your quick assessment on Man City. Has Pep lost his luster?
I don't think he's lost anything at the club. I think, as Graham was saying, I think it's just a case of you lose two big men from a club. It's the same with any club. You lose one big man and it hurts the club. It potentially takes a spine out of a club. You look at Vincent Kompany. He may not have been the greatest player on the pitch, but he got the late winners. He had a great aura around the club. And Mikel Arteta, exactly the same. And that City have lost both of those. And it's going to be interesting to see how Arteta sets up against Man City next week.
Absolutely, and very soon, Neil, I'm going to invite your thoughts on that. We're going to go to you for your scoreline predictions for this opening or returning games of the Premier League season. I look forward to that any second.
Tony, what I was about to say is, as well, following on from the Man City scenario, is that back to this point about, you know, players and injury, and it was interesting you found that statistic, which, as we keep discussing, I'm not necessarily always 100% behind that. But just to say on it, I think the players physically are going to be the fittest ever. So I don't see a problem physically for the players. Let's also remember that players play with knocks. So players do play with injuries. So it'd be interesting to see how what methodology they've used for them statistics. So their conditioning programs have come back the fittest ever. The issue is going to be how they connect play, because they've had to keep this social distancing. And then the final issue they're going to have is mentally, how has that affected people? And I don't think the fan thing in the stadium is that detrimental. It is from a momentum it raises when somebody scores a wonderful goal, but the professional players, they'll still want to go out and have a fantastic event for themselves, and they'll want to be proud to be able to do that for themselves. So just to throw that in there, really.
No, great points as always, Graham, ever erudite, the voice of the Saints, Graham Griffiths. Just want to hope to come now to Jason. I know a big Arteta fan, of course, from an Arsenal perspective. Again, he has that wonderful connection to the Gunners, but that wonderful training and learning the ropes under maybe the greatest Pep. But quickly, your thoughts, your take on Man City this campaign?
Well, in terms of Arsenal, Graham and I will open up the team in terms of Arteta with our European chat. So that will be something for people to listen to, because I've got some actually maybe controversial opinions on Arteta and Arsenal. But of course, you have to listen to that separate podcast from this. In terms of Guardiola, now this is something that I think I will throw back to Graham, because it's a psychological issue that I feel that there is. But I feel that Man City are at the peak of their sigmoid curve. And what's happening here is they're going to have to go into a phase of transition. They're going to have to kind of almost destroy the squad and not be fearful of remaking a new one. Now, they've tried to almost patch together. So to replace Kyle Walker, they brought in Cantelo, and that hasn't worked. They brought in Rodri to replace Fernandinho, and that hasn't worked. They've tried to bring in Jesus to replace Aguero. Now, they've tried to do the right things, but it hasn't worked yet. And I think this is a problem that Guardiola had with Barcelona. The style that he plays is very, very taxing mentally and physically on players. And I think the problem is that Man City have come to the end phase of a lot of those players. Like I mentioned there, Fernandinho, he's 34. He's still an integral part of that team. And when he's absent, it really costs the team. They're really going to have to do some shrewd signings. They brought in Laporte to kind of replace a company in defence, but they need somebody with Laporte. You know, he's so good, Laporte, but he can't do it all. So I think the problem here with Man City is that they've got the right manager to kind of go into the next phase. It's whether Pep has the patience to do it again, because we've seen at Barca, he gave up at phase one, and he won everything, but that was because of a lack of backing from the board. They did their political thing. They changed it over. But at Bayern, he did again another 3-year stint, and he gave up when the phase was kind of over. And then he came to Man City. So it'll be really interesting to see if he can build a dynasty at Man City, because he's given all the tools. I don't think money or politics will be an issue at Man City.
No.
It's whether he wants to do it. So I think that's what's happened at Man City. It's maybe uncertainties as to whether Guardiola will stay as well.
We'll find out. Graham, again, going to invite you to give your psychological perspective. They're wonderful points made. But I think there may well be something within Pep who almost could want to go after a Ferguson style. Again, at the moment, in terms of those three consecutive titles, done only twice by the red side of the Manchester, they have the bragging rights. Of course, the Man City did it twice. They were bidding for their third. It's not looking very probable. So it is very tough. But to rebuild a la Sir Alex Ferguson, he has all the weaponry and the money and, of course, that wonderful football philosophy. If anybody can, Pep can. Graham, though, quickly, your thoughts on the psychological pressures and challenges currently facing the blue side of Manchester.
Absolutely, and brilliant point, Jace, you pick up, and you're right, Tony, as well. And so I look at that as, if you look at his plan B, his backup youngsters, newbies that are going to replace, let's take Jesus for Aguero. Wow, Jesus, he's still done amazing. And he's going to be brilliant. And let's not forget, at the beginning of this season, when Kompany decided to depart, they were lined up for Harry Maguire. Now, if they'd got Harry Maguire, we probably wouldn't be talking what we're talking about at the moment. But he went to United, and obviously that's the history. So they missed out on a few things there. Now, the other, Rodrigo, I still think he's going to take a bit of time to settle. But it's just a transition phase. And you're right about the whole curve. For me, it's the Tuchman theory. They've got to the stage of perform. Now they're coming back into, you know, they have to rebuild. And to do that in any team environment, you take one or two pieces out, you're back to square one. Don't matter who you are, what you are, what you're doing. And I agree with you, Tony. I think Pep is around for the long haul. I'd be gobsmacked if he leaves Man City. I really would. So I think he's in there for a long-term haul. And this is just his second team that he has to rebuild. And I think he'll do it really, really well.
Again, though, wasn't it amazing when we look back now with the cool, hard facts and the objectivity of time that what Ferguson did at Manchester United, it won't be replicated. But if anybody can come close, I think Pep has the capacity. But to go through almost three transitional phases from that early era with kind of Bruce and Pallister and Robson into that 92 class, and then to rebuild with a Rooney and all the other guys, and obviously Giggs is the constant. What an achievement to have that vision and commitment to rebuild and just keep it the United ethos. That's why that has almost been a poison chalice since. And it was great to hear your analysis on Solskjaer just earlier today. Neil, now we're going to change it up. And we, of course, are building up to the return of the Premier League. Returns officially Wednesday the 17th. We will next season return to our internal team prediction punditry wars. And always, I want your views and your predictions because I know you're listening. I know you're a punditry guru. You get them right every week, don't you? You get them all right and you get you're laughing. Well, you know, get involved. Tweet your predictions to @VerumSports. Next season, if that makes sense, when it returns in the August, September time, fresh, we will do internally Verum Sports, either in studio 92.6 FM or here on podcasting form. We will have team predictions. I can promise you that. But just for now, for this season, to kick it off, to return, Neil, I would love your predictions. Kick it off from the Wednesday fixtures, the teams with games in hand. We've analysed Aston Villa, who are in the mire, right down in the dogfight. We've also contrasted Sheffield Wednesday are one of the shining lights of the season. These two clubs collide Wednesday the 17th. Your predictions for that one?
I think with all the stats and the figures and the comments from the team here, looking at form, and looking at things as it stands, I reckon that's an away win. Honestly think that Sheffield Wednesday are going to win that one. It may only Sheffield be United. By the odd goal, but Sheffield United, sorry. And I've got it in front of me, believe it or not. so Sheffield United, I do think they're going to win that one. It might be by the odd goal, but I think it's an away win.
Nice, good shout. And then we've been building up to it. Make sure you listen more for Graham and Jason's detailed analysis of the race for the title, which still is the case. But the next one, Wednesday the 17th, Man City versus Arsenal, big fixture. The guru versus the young buck. It's going to be a big one. It's going to be compelling. Man City surely need the 3 points. Are they going to get it? Graham, Neil, again, your thoughts.
Do you know this one, looking at everything on the table, coming back out of a 3-month break, you know, I reckon that's going to be a draw, score draw.
Nice. I think that's a really fair shout. Moving on to Friday the 19th. Again, Norwich right in the dogfight against your Southampton. Away though they are. Norwich surely need to win this one. Otherwise, it could be good night Vienna. Neil, are you going to back your Saints?
I think. That will be quite a tight game. Norwich do play some good football. I've seen Norwich play down at St Mary's and at the Dell. But realistically, I think the points should be in the bag for Southampton if they carry on playing in the style that they were playing in before the break. I think that's going to be an away win.
Maybe Ings inspired. That could well consign Norwich to the bottom. But interesting shout there. Another juicy looking fixture with my man Mourinho's Tottenham. He hosts his ex-club, the Red Devils, Man United, Solskjaer inspired. Tottenham versus Man United on paper looks a big one. I suspect there'll be goals. Neil, what's your thoughts?
That's a hard one to determine because you've got the way that Mourinho likes to play, he would know like the inside of the workings at Man United. So in theory, you would think that he would Tottenham would have had the win there. But
in theory is, of course, everything's possible in theory. Are you backing that, or do you see Solskjaer and United getting the result there?
Solskjaer could turn the tables on Mourinho, and I think it's going to be... I'm torn, really. I'm looking towards Tottenham, but something tells me that Man United have just got something there which is going to make that an away win.
Calling it another away win. It's going to be tight, that one. I think there will be goals. Good shout, though. I like the way you're breaking this down for us. Neil, moving on to the Saturday fixtures. And Watford versus Leicester. Again, stick tuned, because you're going to hear from Richard Walker, the head of comms from Watford Football Club, just after this. But Watford, Leicester, your thoughts?
Nigel Pearson has done extremely well at all the clubs he's managed or been involved with. And I reckon that one, although Leicester are flying high at the moment, I do reckon Watford could pull that one out of the bag. I honestly do. I reckon there'll be a goal in it, but I reckon Watford will pull it out of the bag.
Stick tuned to hear the predictions and thoughts of Richard Walker. Then we've recognised that Brighton are the only team in the Premier League without a win in 2020. They host Arsenal, who are in double action on Saturday the 20th. Will Arsenal be coming in off a big win over Man City? Or you thought that'd be a draw? Brighton versus Arsenal. Neil, quickly, your thoughts. We do have to keep things rolling.
Stats on that one, and looking at all things as they are, I think that's an Arsenal win.
Looks probable, but will Brighton shock the world? We'll find out. It's a juicy one. Then we've analysed, and we think maybe West Ham could be struggling. They were right on the cusp of the dogfight, and they're taking on high-flying Wolves. West Ham versus Wolves. Quickly, who do you see getting the victory there? Or honours even?
I would say Wolves on their day are going to be able to beat anybody, but there again, West Ham on their day, any club can beat anybody on their day, but it depends on the mindset of both teams. It's going to be their first game back, and it's going to be the mindset of who's going to be the stronger out of the two mentally on the day out of those. Wolves, I think, most probably would just shade it.
Excellent stuff. Got to keep this rocking and rolling. Another struggling team, Bournemouth. Hosting Crystal Palace, their home form, as we've explained already this season, is not the strongest. Your thoughts in this one, Neil? Got to keep this rocking and rolling quite swiftly.
Draw, I think. That one will be a draw.
See, that honours even. Then honours Sunday, even. The 21st, Super Sunday, the first Super Sunday in so while, and how great is it to utter that wonderful phrase, Super Sunday, Newcastle versus Sheffield United. Neil, your thoughts?
Score draw.
Then Aston Villa host Chelsea, also Sunday the 21st.
Away win.
Chelsea get a away win as they seek Premier League, Champions League football. Again, Lampard's man doing well this season. His first at the helm, at the bridge. Final one, the doozy. It is going to be at Goodison Park. There was talk of a neutral venue, but this is the Merseyside derby. Everton versus Liverpool. Are Everton going to put some more pressure on Liverpool, who just need 9 points to claim the title? Quickly, your thoughts, Neil.
Something tells me that with it being a derby day, anything can happen. And I'm going to stick my neck out, and I'll most probably get ribbed to hell for this next week. I'm going to stick my neck out and say it's an Everton win.
I'll tell you what, I think that's a bad shout. I think they could have the effect of this equalising effect that's going to be there for all to see across the coming weeks, i.e. this first game back, which is almost a weird pre-season type feel in this extended but protracted, now condensed end to the season. Truly a sprint we're in now. It's going to be fascinating to see. That is going to be a grudge affair, no questions asked. And I tell you what, everybody in the blue side of Merseyside would be delighted if they can just hold back and really put up a banana skin in the way of, it would seem inexorably, Liverpool's pursuit of the title. Fascinating stuff and great work, guys. I've really enjoyed your company as always, and as always inviting you listening to get your views in. I know you're a punditry genius. Come on, tweet your Premier League predictions. Give us your thoughts on anything you've heard tonight, and indeed going forwards. Make sure you stick tuned for that wonderful breakdown of the race for Europe. You're going to hear from Richard Walker, head of comms for the Wofford Hornets. They also, we've got Hannah Gallagher, a Saracen and England women's rugby star. And if that's not enough for you this very week, Chris Wokes, England One Day World Cup winner, is for you in a podcast. So enjoy. As always, I've enjoyed the company of the machine, Jason McKenna, the ever erudite voice of the Saints, our ex-pro, Graham Griffin, and our newest recruit, who's proving to be a massive asset, Neil Stock. Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much for your time. For you listening, thank you for listening and keep doing so. Good night. God bless. Wherever you are, keep well, keep safe. Keep listening to Verum Sport Podcasting. Enjoy.